Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine. The crisis in Ukraine is global. At the same time, there's a global crisis about the markets. There's an ongoing question about the non-transparency of the battle space, especially the part that's in Russia. Bill Rajov, Senior Fellow for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, joins me as my colleague and co-host, and we're very pleased to welcome again our guide on Ukraine and attendant negotiations, if they exist, John Hardy of FDD. Bill, you have a question for John about the Kursk salient. Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, John, and hello, John. The Kursk salient, as John mentioned, what is the current status there? Deep state Ukraine, which keeps the map updated. It is a couple days out of, hasn't been updated for several days, but it's still showing the Ukrainians occupying territory within Russia and only areas in Ukraine in the region as being undetermined status. What is your take on that? It doesn't seem to reflect reality on what I've seen.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Thanks, John. Great to be back on the show. So in general, Ukraine is still holding on to a little bit of high ground, maybe two or three villages right on that the Kursk-Sumy border. So they've kind of stuck to those fairly defensible positions and they're trying to basically have a buffer there to prevent the Russians from attacking into Ukraine's Sumy Oblast. The Russians, a little bit just to the northwest of that, a few kilometers to the northwest, have been pushing in recent months into or near a few villages inside Sumy. It's unclear exactly how much progress they've made there or in pushing the Ukrainians out of Kursk Oblast, but certainly they've retaken a little bit more ground and fighting continues in that area.
I'm puzzled about the thinking in Kyiv about the Kursk salient and the Belgorod, which you introduced these last weeks. The overall explanation was we did this to draw off Russian troops from the battlefront in Luhansk and Donetsk. That was initially. And then it turned into a negotiating position. We have something to trade for our territory when and if it comes to talks. And now, with the counterattack by the Russians using the North Koreans, there's less and less of Kursk to trade. There's been a battalion probe, according to your report last week, into Belgorod Oblast. So what is the thinking in Kyiv? Are they characterizing these efforts because they've got good troops there, or at least they did?
All right. So as I mentioned, in Kursk, I think right now the goal is just to hold that buffer. That Putin, during his recent trip to the Kursk command post, basically suggested to his military that they should establish a buffer inside Sumy. So I think the Ukrainians are worried that, you know, if they withdraw from that last little bit of Kursk that they now control, you know, the Russians will basically just follow them across the border. And I think that's probably correct. So right now, I think in Kursk, that it's less of a political objective and more just the simple fact of trying to protect Ukrainian territory in Sumy. I think in Belgorod, you mentioned the piece I published back on March 21st. So it's pretty small scale. It looks like the small scale fighting has continued there. Ukrainian officials have not been public with their goals, but I think it's probably safe to say that the objectives there are fairly similar. You know, having a buffer zone to protect against a potential Russian offensive into Sumy. Zelensky recently has warned that the Russians are planning an offensive into Sumy. You know, it's unclear to what extent preparations for that, you know, how far those have advanced, But that seems to be a Ukrainian concern.
And at this time of year, the weather's changing everywhere. Mud season follows the winter. Is there any indication that they're changing their tactics? Or is it still, the last time we talked it, for the Ukrainians, it's all drones all the time. And the Russians now and again use armored vehicles. Any change in the status of those things, John?
It's really been pretty consistent, and the best I can tell from open source. The Russians occasionally will conduct a mechanized assault and maybe up to a company or so. We saw this over the past week in a small town called Andriivka down in Donetsk Oblast. But in general, it's usually on an even smaller scale, down to maybe even a fire team or a platoon or so, often without armored vehicles. Often there'll be a cycle where the Russians will try to attrit Ukrainian positions with artillery, glide bombs, FPVs, or whatever, launch mechanized assaults. If those don't work, they'll try a small unit infiltration tactics, dismounted infantry, sometimes using ATVs or motorbikes, or just kind of infiltrating on foot. So it's a mix. But in general, I think the key thing is the attacks are just very small scale. The Russians still struggle to amass equipment for larger scale attacks. For example, in that attack on Andriivka that I just mentioned, it's about a company's worth of armored vehicles. It looks like the lead vehicle basically stuck on some mines. The column bunched up and then was destroyed by Ukrainian artillery and FPV drones and drone drop munitions. So I think right now the Russians, when they do have limited success, it's usually with those very small scale infiltration tactics.
Bill, you have a question.
John, during the Ukrainian counteroffensive in 2023, the Russians seemed to use helicopters and air power quite to its advantage. We don't see much reporting on this. How have Russian attack helicopters and strike aircraft impacted the battlefield, or has it impacted the battlefield, or has it been muted?
In general, Russian air support is often not what would be described as close in the strict military definition of that term, and that you don't see a lot of detailed integration between Russian ground troops and air. Kind of when the ground troops are in close proximity to the Ukrainians, it's usually kind of a standoff strike by a glide bomb attacking a fixed target. Fed to the aviation kind of in advance and not kind of in coordination with an assault. So it's usually very sequential rather than kind of synchronized.
So would it be proper to say that Russian aviation is more effective on the defensive rather than the offensive?
I think Army aviation, that's probably fair to say for Army aviation. In general, because Russia has not, managed to establish air superiority, it's really kind of constricted in what it can do for air support. So as I mentioned, the biggest thing is really the glide bombs. When you see Su-25 attack aircraft, attack helicopters providing support, it's often through kind of lobbing unguided rockets, which, might serve as harassing fire. It's really not all that effective. It's really kind of a more expensive way of just doing MLRS in truth. So it's the glide bombs, though. I shouldn't downplay that. Those are a big problem for Ukrainian defenders, both in terms of their material effect, but also just psychologically. When a bomb lands near a position, even if it doesn't destroy the position, it can have a big psychological effect. So that has been significant. So far, Ukraine doesn't have a great counter to those glide bombs.
Pokrovsk. The battle around Pokrovsk is weeks old now. I see no significant change on this map, but as Bill says, the deep state map is either out of date or they're lazy. What are the reports from Pokrovsk from the Kyiv side, John?
So I think I should just say first, the deep state, I think they do a really good job. They sometimes will be a little slow to update things just because they're waiting for confirmation. But overall, I'd say it's a really fantastic resource. For those who haven't checked it out, I highly recommend doing so. Great interactive map that shows like Russian advances and places where Ukraine is counterattacking. So Pokrovsk, yeah, the Russians have been trying to envelop this city for many, many months now. I think the operational tempo dipped over the winter, but now seems to have picked back up. By the way, along with the rate of glide bomb employment. So if you look at the data varies a bit, if you look at what Zelensky has put out or the Ukrainian general staff, but the general trend is kind of a pretty big dip over the winter, but then rebounding now to probably above the rate that Russia was employing them last summer and fall. So, you know, more than 150 a day, according to Ukrainian data. I think that'll have an effect, and that effect may compound over time. Right now, as I say, we've seen the operational tempo in terms of Russian attacks pick back up. So far, still pretty slow rate of gain, including around that Pokrovsk area, which does seem to remain Russia's main effort.
So Pokrovsk is now Stalingrad. They've reduced it to rubble again, and they're fighting in the rubble. Is that how to picture this?
Well, the Russians haven't actually entered the city yet. So what they've been trying to do is kind of wrap around from the west and east and cut the roads into the city. They have not yet managed to do that, and they've actually been pushed back a bit on that western flank of the city in recent months. So we'll see if they're able to resume their progress and start wrapping around. Alternatively, they could focus kind of more south of Pokrovsk, kind of in west of Krakova near Velikonovoselka, and kind of push that way, potentially going into the Dnipropetrovsk Oblast.
John Hardy of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy on the battlefield. We're going to move now to the negotiating table. Bill Raggio, my colleague and co-host of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, a senior fellow.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.